I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central podcast brought to you today by Kaspersky. I'm pleased now to welcome Lihan van den Heever to the podcast. Lihan is Enterprise Cyber Security Advisor at Kaspersky, and we're going to have a conversation today about artificial intelligence in cybersecurity, which sounds like a fascinating topic. So, Lihan, welcome to the podcast, and thanks for making the time to talk to Tech Central today.
Thank you very much, Duncan. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Right, so we're almost at the end of what I think has been one of the most tumultuous years in generations. It's been a heck of a year, and Lihan, I'm sure you're looking forward as much as I am to the December break. I think the whole country is looking for a bit of a holiday after this crazy year. I'm imagining that the COVID-19 pandemic has had some interesting impacts on shaping trends in the cybersecurity sector during the course of this year. And I imagine that cyber criminals have been changing their modus operandi during this period as well to take advantage of people working from home, etc. Maybe paint for us a picture from Kaspersky's views of how COVID has changed the security space during the course of this year, and some of the threats that perhaps have emerged that might not have otherwise.
Yeah, sure. It's been a really tough year as far as cybersecurity is concerned. Obviously, no one could have predicted the type of outbreak that we have, and so were the companies unprepared. So we've obviously had to mobilize workforces at the rate of knots, and it's sad to say, but I guess none of the companies could have ever foreseen it being such a rapid movement into a work from home situation. And this obviously presents a field day for the hackers and the attackers alike. So we've, at Kaspersky, we've seen a massive increase. I remember this whole year feels like 1 week, but back in March or something, when it just started, within 2 weeks' time, we recorded a 1,000% increase in malware activity just in South Africa alone. And obviously it's due to the fact of the attack surface of the companies absolutely expanding. You're not purely, sitting behind your firewall, nice and secluded from the outside world, so to speak, and you've got a very good team of security experts that's taking care of your cybersecurity within the organization. You're now actually climbing on your home Wi-Fi hotspot with your router off of a shop floor that's set up with ease of use in mind and not security in mind necessarily. And hackers have absolutely exploited this. And it's not really that they changed their modus operandi. They just ramped up. The same kind of attacks we've seen. We haven't really seen, I would necessarily say, COVID-specific type of attacks. We've just seen regular types of attacks exploiting the situation quite heavily. And when I'm talking about that, we're talking about the regular type of things of massive scale phishing campaigns.
Oh, yes.
You must have noticed this yourself. I mean, I even get a lot more phishing nowadays.
I have.
And And this is a stepping block or a stepping stone for the hackers most of the time. So they use that to get you to click on something that then inadvertently obviously tries to download something that can then, whilst you are maybe connected through a secure connection on VPN to your organization, it can then actually leapfrog into that connection and use that same very connection to gain access to the business. And at that time, it's not even quite clear whether the hacker is trying to attack the business or just the users. It could be both. It could be one or the other. It's just the absolute magnitude of the attacks that we've been seeing is alarming, and unfortunately, no one was prepared.
Yeah, so the home work from home situation, and you mentioned the unsecured routers that people have at home. I mean, I don't think I even checked the last time my home router firmware was updated. I'm probably going to do it after this podcast, but you can be sure, and I'm fairly technically minded, you can be sure that your average consumer probably doesn't even know what firmware is, never mind the fact that it needs to be updated and patched on a regular basis. Now, I imagine all these unsecured devices, people using iPads or home computers that are running Windows XP at home to work during the COVID lockdowns has had a real meaningful impact on companies. Are you seeing cyber criminals specifically exploiting vulnerabilities in home computer equipment to get access to corporate networks and to break into systems in that way and steal information or whatever it is hackers do?
Yeah, absolutely. No, 100%. So we, as I mentioned before, we saw a massive increase in phishing, but not only from an email perspective, SMS-based phishing as well. So a lot of the people that are working from home, they used to have obviously a lot of their work resources and everything on their phone, but maybe they haven't actually had so much phishing attacks through SMS. So I've actually become that person in my family now where every time my family gets an SMS with some weird bit.ly shortened link for, I don't know, updating their SARS or, you know, tax stuff, then they send it to me so I can quickly just execute it in a sandbox to check if it's safe. So we've seen a drastic increase in all different types of attacks, not just through your conventional email, but any other type of messaging as well. Yep. We've even seen an increase in instant messaging attacks as well. So they pretty much, it's a field day, as I said before. They just have such a much larger surface.
Yeah.
Their tools are way, way, way more prepared. You know, having faced years and years of trying to get through very sophisticated hardware and security infrastructure, now they just pretty much need to use some clever social engineering into you believing that you've got a tax payout that's pending or something like that. And from your mobile, they can then get you to log into, in my example, SARS. But it could be any other resource of interest or of financial interest. And then, yeah, scrape your information, do digital fraud, or maybe perform identity theft, sell the information on the dark and deep web. It's incredible to see how much it's become localized as well. I mean, I've been working in the cybersecurity industry for just over 15 years now, and we always feel quite secluded in Southern Africa to a certain extent. Of course, there's attacks happening here, but we're starting to see a massive increase, and it's really starting to affect everyone. And it's becoming almost like no one's really prepared for it. No one was sent to school with training on awareness and cybersecurity and taxes and all these things that I always argue should be taught in school. No one's got these skills, so they so easily fall prey. And the hackers are making money at the moment.
Yeah, and I suppose our improving telecommunications infrastructure, particularly in the last 5 years, where we've seen fiber rolled out into the suburbs and on quite a large scale, has made it easier and made South Africa a target for international hacking groups.
Yes, absolutely. It's an enabler for the hackers.
Yeah.
Again, you know, industrial revolution and expansion of technology is something that we as Kaspersky 100% are behind. We believe it's necessary. So that's the pure reason and the vision of our company is to try and secure these things so that we don't feel scared to move into this digital era and to obviously enable many and the old and the young to feel secure and safe to actually take advantage of these new technologies. Because what's happening now is it's becoming so petrifying for the users out there. For example, my mother-in-law, my parents or whatever, they send every single message to me and ask me to screen it because they're not sure how to distinguish between a phishing message or not. And some of these messages, I mean, we're talking about artificial intelligence and machine learning today, and we'll touch on it maybe later, but some of these messages are so well-crafted through machine learning algorithms that you really are none the wiser. I literally myself need to sometimes detonate it in a safe sandbox environment before I'm really sure whether it's nefarious or not.
Yeah, it's interesting. I received, I won't mention the bank, but I received a phishing email from purportedly from my bank about 2 or 3 months back, and it looked so genuine, and I wasn't able to tell from the mail headers that it was fake. So I took it up with the bank's security team, and they had a very close look at it. And they determined that it was, in fact, a very highly sophisticated phishing scam. But yes, I wasn't able to determine from that, from just looking at that email and looking at the headers, which is what I normally do, whether it was a phishing scam or not, which surprised me because usually you can see in the headers.
Absolutely. You touch on a very good point there. We're getting to a level of sophistication in phishing now where us as security experts, so to say, is we don't we're not always, if we look at the headers, the body, the subject, the two fields, the SPF, if you can track back from the senders and so on. It's so well done that you really do not know. You did the right thing contacting the bank to make sure and not clicking on anything beforehand. But absolutely, the phishing is crafted in such a way nowadays that to the trained eye, it will still seem legitimate.
Yeah, it's actually pretty scary what these guys are able to do these days. But we're going to talk machine learning. We're going to talk AI in this podcast. And I imagine that while companies like Kaspersky are taking full advantage of these technologies to fight cybercriminals, the cybercriminals themselves are using AI and machine learning, as you mentioned in that phishing example, to target. So, I mean, is this a lose-lose situation we're in here? I mean, these tools are going to get more and more sophisticated. Are we going to end up in a situation at some point, 5 or 10 years from now, where there's a constant war being waged between bots or AI algorithms, and humans basically step away from the scene
Yeah,
and
true.
allow this war between the machines to continue?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, this is a very, very fascinating debate. I think we've all, as tech people, have listened to many, many talks and read a lot of articles around AI and machine learning. But it's 100% true what you're saying. As much as we, as security companies and vendors alike, would love to use these technologies in order to enhance our security at the very same rate and maybe sometimes even faster because of their absolute intent. And we'll get into the types of attacks that we see a little bit later. But some of these attacks are sponsored. They might be nation state, they might be sponsored by some or other organization, which means it's difficult for the cybersecurity vendors to really compete with that type of innovation and let's call it sophistication that they have their hands on. I mean, we track about 700 different groups of attackers worldwide. Many of those we don't really make mention of because we, as far as we know, we're the only ones tracking them. So we want to kind of keep it as our competitive edge. But many of these organizations have such a lot of financial backing in their attacking strategies that they hire the best of the best in the world. And these are big attack organizations. I think a lot of the listeners maybe don't necessarily know this, but a hacker isn't necessarily a disgruntled employee or a school kid or a tertiary education student that's playing around with tools. Hacking has very much become a cyber crime, and there's a certain element of cyber warfare that we see every now and again. And nation state attacks and attacks between different unions and organizations and countries and so on. We see it in politics. We see it in fake news and deep fakes and all those kind of things. So it's really, really becoming a very, very difficult industry to contend with. And we as Kaspersky, we find ourselves in that struggle daily of we've got 4,000 experts. A third of our organization is R&D. So we really, really look at providing a lot of training and enablement to all of our customers in order to get everyone rallied behind the movement of fighting cybercrime. Because at the end of the day, we can make a product as smart and as good as possible, and bleeding edge technology goes into it. But as soon as you start going up against some of these larger actors that has a lot of financial backing, you find yourself usually at the short end of the stick in preventing such attacks. You might be able to get access to that attack at like medium level when it's already maybe done the triage and the expansion of the attack inside the organization, but many times then that's too late. So yes, absolutely, we're starting to see the level of sophistication of machine learning not only used by us and many other types of solutions. I mean, if you think about autonomous driving and the medical industry, there's so much good that will come out of machine learning and artificial intelligence. But unfortunately, as much as we use it to our gain as a business, of course the attackers will do the same.
Yeah, and it's a very interesting discussion, and one wonders, certainly at the nation state level, whether there needs to be some sort of moratorium, like we've seen on the control of the proliferation of nuclear weapons. Do we need some sort of agreement on stopping the development of these sophisticated AI malware tools?
Yeah, this is a very, very good topic as well. Maybe a topic for its own whole session, but I completely agree with you because, yeah, there's unfortunately, yeah, there might be moratoriums for moratoriums, and you never know when it's really going to end.
Yeah, no. So let's get things back a little bit on track before we go down that rabbit hole, Lihan. Sure. Let's get back to AI and ML. Maybe take us through what companies like Kaspersky are doing with this technology and how they can be applied in the fight against security threats.
Okay, yeah. So when it comes to machine learning and artificial intelligence, obviously for the listeners out there, there's a difference between the two. Machine learning is actually a subset of AI. Okay. So artificial intelligence is usually the end goal, or could be an end goal, while machine learning is very much developed to get one specific, very accurate result. So, for example, in our solution, we use machine learning in almost every single component of the product, and the product is obviously multifaceted. So there's a lot of different layers of protection, if you know, as they usually say for most of the vendors. Mm. So we've got, for example, our external type of penetration stuff like the firewall and the web antivirus and the mail antivirus components. Now those use machine learning in order to look at samples that come through or data that comes through those different entry points. And then based on machine learning, we are able to identify brand new threat. So obviously all security vendors, with the exception of a few next generation vendors, we made heavily use of, I would say, heavy technologies like signature-based analysis and heuristics and those things. That's either going to be heavy on system resources, or it's going to be very heavy on database size and space on the disk and stuff like that. We used those to identify threat, and it was very effective. It was good enough for the days that has now gone. Now, you know, at Kaspersky, we see between 300 and 340,000 unique samples of malware coming into our database on a daily basis.
Good, great.
And that's a fact. So we cannot do manual intervention anymore. We can absolutely not rely on only signatures anymore, because out of these 340,000 samples, we see 90% of them as what we would call normal run-of-the-mill type of malware. And then we see 9.9% sort of sophisticated malware, like your very sophisticated ransomwares and so on. And then we see 0.1, obviously, APTs, advanced persistent threats and targeted attacks, the real scary stuff. Mm-hmm. And most of our solution nowadays relies on machine learning algorithms in order to detect that last 10%, because what we do, and we've got various different techniques of machine learning. Obviously, if we go into machine learning, again, that's a very long rabbit hole as well. There's various different techniques. Now, Kaspersky started with machine learning as far back as 2008, long before it was a buzzword, so to speak, or an industry standard or an industry recognized methodology. We started with stuff like Decision Tree Ensemble as one of the first machine learning methodologies that we used. And that just allowed us to take a large subset of data and then cluster it into smaller subsets and then take specific, let's call it, for the lack of a word that I'm looking for, but let's call it tags or metadata from those subsets, and then make almost like parallel streams of decisions at a much, much faster rate. And it also allowed us to, for example, the whole point of machine learning is to train it with a massive, massive data set. And then by training it on what, for example, is wrong, it then, or what's right, it then automatically has the ability, the longer you train it with the more amount of data of what's wrong, it's able to tell you the opposite of what, you know, what is right. That's basically how you train your malware, your machine learning. Mm-hmm. So we use it to, for example, if you think about it, 340,000 unique samples, so samples we've never seen before on a daily basis. If you do the math on how large that database gets, you'll understand why we need technologies that don't really care about these samples anymore, but rather look at their behavior and their characteristics, and then be able to almost classify them as an entity, and from that be able to look at similar files that we've never seen, but at least draw those same similarities and conclusions to then positively identify malware that we've never seen. And that's how we basically use machine learning. So absolutely, it increases performance, it increases the overhead of working through, as I mentioned, hundreds and thousands of samples. It increases the accuracy as well. So the better you train your machine learning, the better the outcomes. So you start also really working, or I would say cutting back on false positives, which is another very important thing. A lot of the vendors that we compete with are really, really good at detection rates, but then they might have very high false positive rates because maybe they are too sensitive at detecting anything that's suspicious. So you need to also strike that balance where security does not detract from user experience as well. So it's really striking that balance and then continuously training and improving the technology day by day, year by year. Every single solution we bring out, we improve the machine learning algorithms to a point where I assume in the near future we might not require signatures anymore. At the moment in our solution, it really is the last fallback. All the behavioral analysis happens way before we even look at signatures, just because it's much faster and it's way more accurate.
Interesting. So I just can't get over this number that you mentioned at the beginning of your answer there. 340,000 yeah. unique malware samples unique. A day are new.
Yeah. Yes.
Does that mean that there are 340,000 people creating that malware, or does it mean that that malware is being mutated? I mean, maybe just take us through it. What does it actually mean? How is it possible that number of malware yeah. instances are being created daily?
It's an excellent question. It's the first time I got that question, so I'm quite stoked to give this answer. But you're very right. It's not 340,000 new malware writers necessarily. So there's a concept, and I'm just explaining one because I'm not one of the experts, but there's the concept of polymorphic code, where many of these malwares will be exactly the same kind of strands. For example, we have a solution called Kaspersky Attribution Engine, where we can actually look at the genotypes within malware. So specific strands inside the code that are similar to others that we've seen before. And that allows us, again, once again, to either give attribution, like this might be a malware strand that is similar to Lazarus, or maybe it's similar to Dooku or whatever. But at the very same time, what I'm trying to get to is that the malware that we see that are unique on a daily basis aren't necessarily brand new malware. It could be a massive chunk of those are malware that's just been morphed or changed in such a way that it now is seen by conventional anti-malware solutions like signature-based or heuristic-based solutions as something completely different, and it's no longer able to catch or identify that malware purely just by changing its fingerprint in a sense.
Interesting. So given all of that, do you think we're winning the war here?
I would say we're still in the war very much. I would say that we are luckily, especially from if we come to the machine learning perspective, we seem to be ahead on the war against the attackers so far. We did a nice article on SecureList. We can maybe link it somewhere, where we explained why and how we are ahead on the war so far. It can change at any moment in time, unfortunately. You know, this is an industry that keeps evolving. I mean, if we take ourselves back 2017, when WannaCry came out. That was an absolute blow to the gut for every business that got it and for every cybersecurity vendor that couldn't detect it. That was a pure example of, you have to commend the writers that were involved in that and how to get that spread so far and wide. It was literally absolutely everywhere. I acutely remember the morning I stepped into the office on that dreadful day that WannaCry came out. So that's an example where they just got that one edge, maybe got us with our pants around our knees, and that's not just talking about us. That's very much the entire security industry. We were all crying the same tears. So this is absolutely a war that is still very much ongoing. I don't think it's ever going to end. I think at some point there might be a situation where machine learning and AI technologies are going to start fighting AI technologies, and really the difference is going to come in on the quality of the training of the AI. So this is where, again, one of the things that I wanted to touch on today, where Kaspersky does really well, and why, again, so you've got various vendors claiming machine learning and artificial intelligence, and I would definitely urge our listeners to go and do a little bit of deep dive on the solution before you make a purchase decision, and really look at what they mean by machine learning and how they actually implement it in their solutions, because it's a buzzword, and it's like a tick box that you need inside the solution, but it's an absolute data science talent, and it's something that not all machine learning capabilities are the same at all. So you need to really look at the depth and the quality of the machine learning within the organization's solution before you really know how effective it's going to be. For example, last year and the year before, we've got a solution called Kaspersky Anti-Targeted Attack, which is a very, very highly sophisticated tool to look at the other areas of your network, like the network core switch traffic, the gateway traffic, and the email traffic, and so on and so forth. So basically giving you more of a helicopter view. But then using very, very strong machine learning. So there's actually a form of machine learning and neural networking running on your premises that then in real time looks at the behavior of these certain areas. And that solution has been, there's a testing company called Isolabs, and that solution has been undefeated with unique strands of malware. We've never ever had a malware, according to that specific testing company, pass this solution. So that's testament to, again, the quality of machine learning that and the effort that we put in our machine learning, because it's absolutely an industry. It's not just a feature. You've got people that program it. They're called data scientists. And it's important to go and evaluate where that machine learning and where that engine comes from. It's something that I just wanted to mention as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about, if, let's say, a CIO of a large South African company, or even a medium-sized South African company, is listening to this podcast or watching this podcast, and they're wondering what advice as Kaspersky would give to them. We're coming out of a pandemic. They're obviously having to spend a lot more money on digital transformation, moving to the cloud, etc. Yeah. These have become top priorities for many South African organizations, and in fact, organizations around the world. What should they be thinking about security as they go through these digital transformation projects? Should it be a fundamental component of everything they do?
Yes, absolutely. So I wouldn't like to be a CIO in the last year, first and foremost. So my hats go off to all the good CIOs in our country and in our region. Really, really tough year for them. The advice I would give, I mean, if you look at their pain points, they usually have, or currently they have, about three different things that are glaring them straight in the face. The one thing is awareness and skills. So the first thing that they need to work on is make your end users your first line of defense. So start looking at the regular end user at home and teach that person how to be a little bit more cyber aware. So there's a lot of programs. Kaspersky has one. A lot of the other vendors has these awareness campaigns.
Right.
And get them to become cyber security aware. That's going to be half your battle for this specific acute problem now of a massive work from home mobilization. Workforce from home. Then when it comes to skills, so I can't remember the study that was done, so I'm paraphrasing, but I believe by the year 2022, there's going to be a shortage of 3.5 million cybersecurity experts globally. So the other thing that is extremely important for the CIOs and CISOs of today is to start looking very, very closely at your teams and your security officers working in the SOC, etc. Look at the sharp guys and get them skilled up and trained up. Don't necessarily just go and hire the best and the most expensive resources from everywhere. We're already sitting with a skill shortage. Rather grow the people that you have and get them very, very good at their task. So at Kaspersky, for example, there's courses we do like digital forensics, malware analysis, reverse engineering, Yara rule training, incident response, etc. There's many different highly sophisticated courses that's going to allow you to grow your own team into that next generation type of attack force. Let's call it the blue team, the guys that are trying to keep the bad people out. So those are the two immediate things. Then, yes, 100%, you need to go and look at the tool sets. So that is a very subjective thing, I guess. So it's really going to depend on what brand you enjoy, which brand you trust, which brand you've got a good experience with. And then also obviously looking at market research. So go look what the independent testers are saying. Go look at what Gartner and Forrester and IDC and, you know, Radicati and all those guys are saying about these technologies. And then try and base your decisions upon something you know, properly thought through. And then obviously, you know, the CIOs are also struggling when it comes to, you know, management, convincing management and so on. So there's always the tug of war between security and budget allocation and all those kind of things. So I really feel for the CIOs because some of the technologies that we brushed over today aren't really cheap technologies.
Sure.
But you really do need to think about how much your IP or your databases or your personal privacy of your people or the company's customers are worth. And once you can put a, you know, price tag on that, maybe spend 1/10 of that on security and it might already get you much, much further down the line. Yeah. And then lastly, I mean, work on the 80-20. If you're really, really stuck, if you're one of the smaller to medium enterprises and you are stuck on the budget curve, I know it's been a really tough year on everyone. So maybe budget is a problem. Go on the 80-20 split. Go get the 20% of technologies and people and effort that's going to get you 80% of the results. And then roadmap a strong 3-year plan. So go look at what do we need to absolutely implement after that 80% to get to 100%.
It's interesting what you say about security budgets relative to the overall IT budget, because I don't think there's a company out there that suffered a data breach that then looks back and said, I wish we'd spent less money on security.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Before I let you go, Lihan, this has been a really good discussion, but I know you wanted to touch on user access rights and privileges and how machine learning can help in that environment as well.
Yeah, it's actually maybe it's a very good example to explain to the listeners also where machine learning is extremely effective. There's obviously there's a lot of applications in the world where machine learning is revolutionizing everything. And I think it's important for the listeners, there's a group of listeners, myself slightly included, that is worried about machine learning and AI that's going to start taking some jobs from other people and things like that. I'm sure you've had this on your show already.
Sure.
But it's important to know that, you know, we always keep revolutionizing and finding new things to do. So whilst mundane tasks are going to fall away, maybe through machine learning and machines and robots being able to do them, eventually we're going to start thinking of new and better things. Like, you know, when Alexander Bell got, you know, the telephone, or thought of the telephone, there was no use for, sending pigeons with messaging everywhere. And that started seeing, stuff like call centers, happening, and that created more jobs and stuff like that. So there's going to be jobs that come out of machine learning. But just to get back to your question, when you look at something like, access and account management and things like that, that's a very, very difficult task for large organizations. And anyone that's worked in the Active Directory space with account permissions and rights will know that this is it's a really, really big nightmare to manage this and to have complete oversight of what's going on. So if you look at machine learning, it helps you in such a great way because it not only looks at username and password and access rights, it actually looks at the behavior of the user. And then is able to, on the fly, make decisions on what this user is allowed to do and not to do. And most importantly, is this the legitimate user that's always using this device? So that solution will actually start looking at the speed of your keystrokes. If it's a smart device, it can even go as far as looking at the pressure sensitivity on how, you know, normally how hard do you touch your fingers on the screen? What articulation do you keep the phone at? Where do you log in from most? You know, all of those data points we can now use in access management in order to make firstly and foremost 100% sure that this is the legitimate person that's logging in. And secondly, is he accessing and behaving like he's supposed to? Why is user X, that we know is user X, now suddenly at work on a Wednesday evening at 10 p.m. Offloading 10 gigs of data to Dropbox?
Yes.
You know, it's able to pick up those type of things. And that's where machine learning really, really comes in as an absolute important thing. And once again, I mean, machines work much faster than people can, unfortunately. Mm. So it's just going to be impossible for humans to keep up to the pace of what these machines can help us with.
Interesting. I think there's a certain financial services institution that this week is wishing it had that technology in place, I suspect. But we'll not go there.
I hear you.
Lihan, this has been a fascinating discussion. I hope to have you on the podcast again at some point in the future, and we can actually delve into some of these topics in some more detail. I'm particularly interested in the where this is going in 5 to 10 years from now, and whether we're heading for
a
war of the AIs, and whether that is a good or a bad thing ultimately. But we'll
cybernetics.
Exactly. But we'll leave it. We'll leave the discussion there for today. Lihan van den Heever is enterprise cybersecurity advisor at Kaspersky. Thanks so much for sharing your insights with Tech Central.
It's been an absolute pleasure. I really enjoyed this. Thanks, Duncan.